Over time, moss, mold, and mildew stains cover your home, and cleaning them is too much work. You need Wet and Forget, the easy bleach-free way to clean tough outdoor stains. For decks, patios, and cushions, use Wet and Forget outdoor spaces. No scrubbing, no rinsing. Just apply and let it do the work for you over time. Got a bigger job? Reach second-story siding and roofs with Outdoor Max. Up to a 30-foot reach and 2x the coverage. Get Wet and Forget at Home Depot, Lowe's, and Walmart.
Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's LoneStar Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
Second hour, Darren Donick and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, here on this beautiful day here in Nashville. Man, Middle Tennessee is sunny. It's going to be 82, 83 degrees today as we sit here in late October. Great discussion with former Predators captain Mike Fisher last hour. Don't forget Tim Hasselbeck, his weekly chat with us coming up at high noon. But first, let's head up to Toronto. Let's bring in Richard Deitch from The Athletic. We were talking about you on Monday's show. We were sad to hear the news that Mike Doc Emrick has decided after 90 years of doing NHL broadcasts that he is going to retire. And we kind of reflected on all of our encounters with him over the years and his appearances on this show and just being around him and things you've written about him. But for us, it was a sad day. We knew it would come to an end sometime. But it's going to be weird next season not to hear him behind the mic.
Well, first, good to be with you guys. You really, given your lineup coming up, you really could do much better than me as a guest. But still, I appreciate the invite all the same. Mike Emmerich is one of the rare broadcasters, and you saw this the day that the news came out, where he announced his retirement. Where like the reaction was essentially universally positive about his career, universally appreciative about how he approached his job. It's very rare in 2020 to find universal opinion about anything, including a sports broadcaster. But Mike Emmerich was that. He was the voice of the NHL for generations. So really, depending, irrelevant of your age, generally speaking, for the most part. Mike Emmerich has been the soundtrack of hockey if you're a hockey fan. His style was incredibly unique in that he was able to do frantic, probably better than any broadcaster I've ever seen. And he sort of used that with the ability to throw in some verbs and words you might never have heard of. The passion and joy and love of hockey was clearly apparent regardless of the game he played. And then here's the last one. This is actually important because this won't necessarily be the case as broadcasters head forward. Mike Emmerich grinded before he got into the quote-unquote majors. He was a college hockey announcer. He announced for, I think, 6 or 7 years in the AHL and the minor leagues, and then eventually got a job as a team announcer, I think first for either the Flyers or the Devils. I have to check his bio again. And so this is not a guy who became like a national broadcaster, like, you know, at 30 or 29 or 31, which we, you know, really see today in Adam Amin or Joe Buck or someone like that. So his career is just so unique in that, like, you can sort of close your eyes and imagine this guy, like, grinding in the minor leagues like Slapshot, you know what I mean, like with a little tape recorder covering these games until he got to the big time, until he got to, you know, to become the guy at NBC. And I think that kind of experience just makes him so unique in the business. He'll be missed. He's really a brilliant broadcaster and a very, very his reputation in the business is incredible. He's been on your show, I know. He's really considered a generous and very nice man, and he deserves all the acclaim that he's received.
I'm glad you said that because, look, I get it. I'm not going to be phony about this, but I had to go through a grind, and I appreciated the grind, and it probably makes me appreciate it even more today. I don't ever take this for granted because I don't, you know, I'm certainly not going to get into the stories of all the little trailers and AM stations that I started off in, and the grind and overnights and all that good stuff, because if I could have just landed a big cushy job right out of the gates, I would have taken it. But I do think that's a little bit missing. I bring that up to say I do, because we all now, and I'm certainly not going to pigeonhole all young people today and young adults and say those damn millennials and turn into get off my lawn guy and say they all want it now and fast. And because, you know, if I could have had it fast and then back then, I would have done that too. But I do think you lose the appreciation of the grind, and you lose the appreciation if you really didn't go through stuff like what you're talking about, the older you get. And for the people, you know, good for them if they do land the big jobs in, you know, their early 20s or mid-20s or what have you, and they don't really go through that true grind that you're talking about. I do think it's something that's a little bit missing today, because, you know, a lot of people today, they just want it now. They don't want to wait. They don't want to go through a process. They just want it now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the business is sort of cratered too, so there's not even as many of those smaller jobs anymore, let alone big jobs. My career is a little bit of both. If I'm just going to be 100% honest with your audience, when I graduated from University of Buffalo, which is where I went to undergrad, I worked for a couple of years in Buffalo, making essentially no money, $10 a story for a weekly. So I literally had to write 20 stories a week to pay my rent. Thankfully, Buffalo was a pretty cheap city to live in back then, so my rent was crazy. But that was a grind. I mean, 2 years of going in, like, you know, like -5 degree weather with snowstorms to cover, like, you know, high school football, or, you know, in the worst conditions you can imagine. I was fortunate to cover the Bills and the Sabres as a very, very young person in the business, and that was helpful. So, you know, I did grind in that sense for a couple years. Now, that said, and this is where it flips, I worked for Sports Illustrated in my mid-20s. You know, I got pretty lucky just in terms of they liked my stuff. I went to a pretty prestigious grad school, and which put me in the same city as Sports Illustrated. So I have been a massive beneficiary of getting a big-time job or working at a big-time place in my 20s. At the same time, you know, I do understand the grind. I did have to grind for a couple of years before, you know, sort of luck landed on me. And then obviously at The Athletic, it's the same thing. I'm working for a pretty prestige brand. So I've seen it both ways, but I think that I happen to agree with you in that I'm not one who's like, oh, you got to earn your dues, you know, son. You can't, if I think anybody can get a job at 22, that's a big time job, they should take it. But I do think there, if you have sort of had to struggle a little bit, if nothing else, I think you do appreciate the big job more.
I don't know your timeline real quick before I pass this to Willie. Were you there in school when was Pete Weber up there doing his work in Buffalo when you were there in school?
Yeah, I mean he left the city around. Yeah, I mean our paths crossed. Let me say this: our paths crossed a little bit. I think
okay. He
was out of town by the time that. When did he come to Nashville? Do you remember the date?
Well, he came to Nashville, but there were stops after. He came to Nashville in 90, the first season of the Predators.
Which was 98.
98,
okay. So, yeah. So he basically, our paths may have crossed in Buffalo for like a year before he jetted to Nashville. But I know him. I know Pete. And Pete's a great guy. Pete's always been, was always kind to me when I was really super young, because he used to do the Bisons.
Yes,
if I remember right, and so I would see him there, the AAA team.
You know, he knows Buster.
Might have been the Pirates back then.
Richard, he knows Buster. Just so you know, he will give you. He will. Yeah. You can do an interview with Buster. Pete will set that up if you ever need to.
Pete is Buffalo. He remains Buffalo.
And happy anniversary, Pete and Claudia.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, that's right. Anniversary. Yeah,
31st anniversary.
But yeah, no, I mean the again like. You know, I think in broadcasting, I think even there's a challenge to be a broadcaster as Pete was, to sort of introduce a new market to a sport. And, you know, you have a really important role there in terms of, in terms of what you do. Interestingly enough, if I was the Seattle Kraken broadcaster, and I don't know if they've named that person yet, one of the first calls I would make would be to Pete Weber, because I would want to know, what were those first couple of seasons like to not only call the games, but in a sense to sort of educate the community a little bit on this new sport. And Pete had one of these life experiences that don't often happen. Most of the times you're a sports broadcaster, you know this, Willie. You go to a market where the sport's established. You got to be the person to establish yourself as the talent or your style. But Pete coming to Nashville, it wasn't just, hey, here's a new broadcaster. It's also, hey, here's a new sport that really doesn't have a long history in this city. And, you know, here's the guy who's essentially not only going to call the games, he's going to help teach you the sport.
No question. And I think we have said for a long time that and I think they thought they had this in mind when they hired Pete and Terry Crisp, but you could not have two better ambassadors for that particular role that you just described than those two guys. They were probably more valuable than any player because the players were all unknowns, right? Most hockey players in general were unknown to the fan base, but even to hockey fans, the expansion guys were unknown players, right? It's not that they brought in some guys that anybody had ever heard of. So Pete and Terry were the guys who carried it and just made it, you know, made it fun, made it personable, and all that stuff.
Yeah, and then, you know, again, I would never equate this to this because it's not fair because nobody is like Vin Scully. But Vin Scully was essentially ambassador to baseball in Los Angeles when the Brooklyn Dodgers moved to L.A., and Scully educated an entire fan base. But not only that, was essentially the brand ambassador for that brand. That, I mean, you know, when you associated that team before any players, you associated – the broadcaster in that situation. It's one in a way, amazingly enough, in 2020, you know, in this crazy freaking time we're living in, a local broadcaster, a team broadcaster, still has a lot of cachet and a lot of importance in a community. Like that voice, whether it's on radio, whether it's on television, like still has significant meaning, which is interesting because that was the exact same thing if we had this conversation in 1923. Or 1943 or 1963. It's like the connection still exists, even though we live in this modern world.
Richard Deitch is with us from The Athletic. And Richard, you had a good conversation on one of your latest posts on The Athletic, talking to television directors and how they are trying to go about showing things. And you focused on the NFL, but you really could have done it for any sport. But when people are watching an NFL game, I think it'd be interesting to keep this in mind of what the director is trying to show you to bring out the game in its best way, knowing that there's not as many fans in the stands.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest change in talking to, and basically I talked to the directors who direct the top games, the director of Nance Romo, director of Collinsworth Michaels, et cetera, et cetera. And so what they said, the biggest difference, obviously, of course, is that they're doing this under COVID-19 protocols. So everything is socially distanced. They're working with a mask in the truck. Like their whole like sort of work environment has changed. So sort of keep that in mind. How that impacts you as a viewer is because there's no crowd, they're shooting the game much, much lower. If you've noticed, you don't often see the wide shots that you normally would see in the NFL where maybe they sort of like, you know, they'd bring you down like almost like a Skycam view and then come all the way down to behind the quarterback to give you like scale, especially if the quarterback's in an opposing stadium, to give you like a scale of how loud it is for that quarterback or how tough an environment it is. Those shots really are not existing this year. They're very much like sort of what they say they call tight on the field. They're really, really trying to stay tight on the field. One of the things that, because of COVID-19, that probably is a little bit of a benefit for viewers given the directors, is because there's not a ton of crowd, they're able to put camera operators in the stands, and they're able to shoot some angles, particularly low angles that they never could shoot before because there would normally be fans there. And then the other thing, we talked a lot about other things, but sort of the other thing that was pretty notable to me was these guys love to get coaches' reaction shots. Obviously, something happens in the game, and, you know, whether it's a Belichick or, you know, Mike Vrabel or whoever, they react to it. Because coaches are wearing masks, It makes it a much tougher decision for the director to go on that shot because you're not really going to get a reaction unless the coach throws a clipboard or really makes some kind of movement where you can sort of see what they're thinking. So just their whole philosophy and their whole mindset has changed in terms of just how they're directing a game because the game in 2020 is just very different than it was in any other year.
We're talking to Richard Deitch of The Athletic, and I know what I'm about to bring up probably will never happen because it makes too much sense in my opinion, but because of COVID, we've now seen you know, a couple of games shifted. We've now had two Monday night doubleheaders. The week one that they usually have on ESPN, and then we saw it this week. I would love to see the Thursday night game go away and have two Monday night games. Do you think because the NFL has been forced to have to move stuff around this year that they see the product, they hear from fans on it, do you think that it actually could have a chance of happening, whether it's next season or with the next TV deal?
I think my short answer is no, because and I don't necessarily like fundamentally disagree with you. Thursday night football hasn't popped like the way. I mean, how do I sort of phrase this? I mean, at the end of the day, I'll just be honest. Like, they're not going to change it because there's too much money that they've been paid for Thursday night football. Like, they've established a market. They can get paid an inordinate amount of money for it. The league and the players have already sort of agreed to play on that night, so I don't see it changing. I do understand where you're coming from. It does feel, even today, it sort of still feels odd to me. It just feels like this odd one-off. And, like, I will certainly watch the game, but, you know, I think the game sometimes pops if it's, like, two great teams, and then other times, you know, felt like forever it was like the Browns versus the Jets, and you're like, oh my god, you know, why is this game even happening today? So I don't think it'll change. In terms of the Monday Night Football doubleheader, which I think like logically makes more sense because it connects to the Sunday schedule, the reason I don't think you will ever see that is because I think the NFL does not want to have a 10 o'clock Eastern time kickoff. So 7 p.m., let's say Pacific time, if you're in the, you know, obviously there, 8 o'clock in the, you know, like in Denver, et cetera, 9 o'clock where you guys would be, because the viewership numbers ultimately at a certain point do drop. Once you get around 11:30 or so in the Eastern time zone, like data has shown for years and years and years, the audience really does drop. And I think they would be worried in terms of the viewership numbers, in terms of the optics, and ultimately in terms of charging networks more money for the product. I think they'd be a little bit too worried about the Monday Night Football doubleheader not producing the viewership numbers they'd want. You could sort of reverse it and do the interesting one, like, okay, what happens if you went like a 5 p.m. kind of Eastern time kickoff and then an 8 p.m. Eastern time kickoff? That's kind of interesting to me. But then right. I think you'd have to have, like, honestly, that 5 o'clock game would almost have to be great teams, I think, to get people to watch. Like, you'd have to have Bills Chiefs, or you'd have to have Titans Patriots. I think if that game turned out to be a dog, you know, you could be looking at like 6.5 million people watching instead of 12, and that's not a number I think the NFL watches. So that would be the downside risk on that, is that the you know, the viewership numbers are too early. That said, a 5 p.m. kickoff, I feel like, would be so friendly to fans, and I think, you know, you'd be able to get home and still, like, you know, get home at a decent time. You'd be able to tailgate, you know, you take off from work and just make it a fun day. But I'm not sure if I see it. It's an interesting idea. I just don't know if I see it.
Well, and I've always thought of it because I know now Disney, and, you know, they want to get ABC kind of back in the fold and try and get a Super Bowl. And so you put one game on ESPN, one game on ABC, it you know, it might work for them if they were to do it that way whenever the next TV deal, you know, I know it's a few years before that's up.
Yeah, what's going to be interesting is sort of like ultimately what happens in this new contract, and would they be willing to do some different things that they didn't do before? My one prediction, and trust me, this ain't a genius prediction, is that ABC will be getting a Super Bowl. I think ESPN has done everything in its power to try to get a better relationship with the NFL. I mean, you know, short of basically giving Roger Goodell the ESPN campus as a gift. So, like, that relationship has gotten much better. And this is where, like, this whole business is just insane. So ESPN will give the NFL the pleasure of the $2 million check they write just to get into the Super Bowl rotation. But I think they will. So you will see ABC for sure get a Super Bowl game. And I think ultimately we are not far away from ABC simulcasting all the ESPN games. The reason why that has not happened is ESPN, of course, to justify the $9 that you pay as a subscriber for ESPN and to justify you know, their place in the cable universe and charging cable operators all this money. They've kept the NFL game on ESPN because they want to increase the value of ESPN. They want to make ESPN valuable enough where all these cable operators have to have the that station or that network on. I think, though, that the NFL is ultimately going to insist on the simulcast because it's better for the NFL. What, you know, your viewers probably, your listeners, I should say, you know, they don't live in this world as much as I do, but it really makes a massive difference. I know, Willie, you know this. When you have a game on a network like an ABC, an NBC, or CBS, even in 2020, versus a cable place like an ESPN or an FS1, it is a game changer on viewership. And I think the NFL is going to insist on wanting that.
Yeah. Well, we'll see how it plays out for sure. Richard, we appreciate the time as always, and we will talk to you again here pretty soon.
Thanks, Richard.
All right. Book better guests than me next time. Thanks.
Richard Deitch of The Athletic talking the media circus.
We've got him on the A-list. We've got Richard on the A-list.
He's totally on the A-list. Totally on the A-list. We'll talk to Caleb Joseph coming up at the bottom of the hour. More coming. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Overtime, moss, mold, and mildew stains cover your home, and cleaning them is too much work. You need Wet and Forget, the easy bleach-free way to clean tough outdoor stains. For decks, patios, and cushions, use Wet and Forget outdoor spaces. No scrubbing, no rinsing. Just apply and let it do the work for you over time. Got a bigger job? Reach second-story siding and roofs with Outdoor Max. Up to a 30-foot reach and 2x the coverage. Get Wet and Forget at Home Depot, Lowe's, and Walmart.
What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.